the state of New Mexico.
Please be seated. We are here on the matter of Pori, S1SC41336. Ms. Taylor, I see that you have reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Correct.
Thank you. You may enter your appearance and proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Ann Taylor. I'm here on behalf of the disciplinary board. And on behalf of the disciplinary board, on their recommendation, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel did file a petition for summary suspension against Mr. Pori. That was filed pursuant to the summary suspension rule 17207A1E3, that a criminal complaint had been filed against Mr. Pori that had allegations that Mr. Pori had attempted to bring into a correctional facility a controlled substance, namely Suboxone. What the board is required to show is that there are facts that would demonstrate a substantial probability of harm, loss, or damage to the public. And that's what I would like the court to focus on today. I'm not suggesting that summary suspension is appropriate in every criminal case that gets filed before the adjudication has taken place. But in this specific case, we have a criminal defense attorney alleged to have engaged in criminal conduct while attempting to visit an inmate.
Ms. Taylor, the basis for the filing was the filing of the criminal complaint.
Correct.
That's since been dismissed.
Correct.
Has that had any effect on your position today?
Our position is that I don't read the rule so narrowly as to say that the court can't take notice of the charges that were filed, particularly in this instance, because they were dismissed by the state court, but in that dismissal, what the dismissal said was that the federal authorities are looking at it themselves. So it's not a question.
But nothing's been done.
Nothing's been done. That's correct.
So does that have any effect?
Does that have any effect on
your petition or what you're seeking?
I don't believe so. I still think the knowledge that we have that somebody's under investigation for criminal conduct, again, criminal conduct that occurred while you are actually in the practice of law, not something in your household or something, some other instance, but criminal conduct that while you're in the practice of law, I believe still supports the idea that a summary suspension is appropriate. This is particularly important, and I think maybe
so. Let me ask you this. There's a criminal investigation, allegedly. So he should be suspended until that's done? I mean, that could take 10 years.
No, Your Honor, I think...
When does it end?
I think what would happen is that we would do a summary suspension from this court, and then it goes back through the disciplinary process. And we don't need even charges or even a conviction. We know that under Trina to support a violation of 16804B, that an attorney has engaged in criminal conduct. So we would let it make its way through the disciplinary process. If it were found by the disciplinary board and ultimately this court that he had not engaged in any criminal conduct, the suspension would be lifted. But that's after it has been allowed to go through the disciplinary process.
So as of right now, under 17207E1, you're not taking the position that you are investigating Mr. Pori.
Well, I want to be clear, because procedurally, it was filed pretty soon after I became aware of the charges being filed. In the interim, as Mr. Pori actually said in his response, he did file a self-report. So we do have something
to investigate
now.
So even if we denied it today, you'd be filing under E1 tomorrow.
Correct. So we'd have, I could amend it to file under E1. So the position is still the same. Basically, the underlying allegations, even the nexus to the practice of law, are serious enough. We believe that the public will not understand why is a criminal defense attorney who's accused of this allowed to still practice.
Do you have any response to the declaration that Mr. Pori filed, basically saying I'm innocent of these charges and it should not be considered by the court?
Well, again, we don't need charges or a conviction for us to find a criminal violation under the rules of professional conduct, 16804. So he is entitled, of course, to assert whatever defense he has in the criminal proceeding. He's also entitled to assert whatever defense he has in the disciplinary proceeding. I believe that's for hearing an evidentiary hearing for another day. In the interim, we're saying that the allegations are serious enough, we believe, to warrant summary suspension.
Can I ask more a practical question? And I should know the answer to this, but how long is it taking now for this process to flesh out below, the disciplinary process? I mean, how long are we realistically talking for this process to pan out?
If I were to give a time frame for general discipline, I tell people 6 months to a year, depending on the nature of the investigation and the witnesses and so forth.
Okay. Ms. Taylor, you can do an investigation without a suspension.
Correct, I can.
So why do we need the suspension?
Again, I think it's a protection of the public issue. That's the concern that we have. I'm repeating myself a little bit, but if it was sort of an ordinary criminal case, a run-of-the-mill criminal case, where we had an attorney accused of something, we might take a different approach. We might not ask for summary suspension. We certainly don't in every case. Some cases, because of the nature of them, and the perception of the public of why an attorney is still allowed to practice, given the allegations involve the practice of law, not just something totally unrelated.
So is this, to your mind, more akin to Mr. Clear because it's related to the practice
Correct.
Of law? And I'm not suggesting that Mr. Pori is engaged in anything close to what Mr. Clear has admitted to. But just in that vein of it's related to the practice, as opposed to, say, a DUI.
Correct.
Okay.
I have still time, but if you all have additional questions.
Well, I do have. You want to do a hearing. You want to do a suspension. You want to do an investigation. Then you want to do a hearing. In the meantime, there's this pending, whatever it is, at the federal court on a criminal referral. He's got a Fifth Amendment right. He's got all kinds of constitutional rights. Does he have this, and assuming he would assert them in your proceedings to protect himself with regard to those latter, this is a very, very complicated matter. And what do you accomplish?
I believe that we accomplished the mission of the board, which is to
suspension.
To ensure that the attorneys practicing are of good character and are not in violation of the rules of professional conduct.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hart, if you'll enter your appearance, you may begin.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Nicholas Hart on behalf of Mr. Pori. At council table with me is Mark Lowry. As the court has already recognized, Mr. Pori is here on a petition for summary and suspension. What I think is important to talk about today with the court is just how little process is involved in that and who the burden lays with because of that. Here, the burden, which is not completely clear from the case law or the rules of what the burden of proof would be, it just uses the words substantial probability, is solely with the disciplinary board. But when we look at the structure of 17207, this rule, which the subsection we're here before today, which talks about criminal complaint or indictment, alongside the other circumstances where someone can be summarily suspended, such as admitted wrongdoing or criminal conviction, when we look at that alongside each other, there has to be some type of heightened standard, more than just attaching a criminal complaint, which needs to be supported by nothing more than probable cause, and summarily taking away a license for an indefinite amount of time.
The facts here are somewhat, I mean, really the big issue here is knowledge, right?
That's correct.
No, there's no question, there's nothing disputing that the drugs were taken in the eyeglass case. It's really just knowledge.
Yeah. Well, what I will say, Your Honor, is that part of the problem with the summary process is we don't have the ability to respond to many of those questions. So we have submitted HIPAA requests, but we have not been able to obtain, for example, pictures of the glasses case or other information to show, you know, is this, you know, exactly how was this hidden in there? How would the average person know? You know, to talk about the quantity of what's in there, any of the allegations that Mr. Pori would normally in the course of an investigation be able to address. But yes, Your Honor, knowledge is critically important because it's certainly a different analysis for this court if someone engages in a lack of judgment. Well, Mr. Pori admits that he did by taking, you know, these glasses into his client, which, let me tell the court, did actually have glasses in the glasses case. You know, this was not an empty glasses case. That a lack of judgment alone shouldn't be enough in order for the court to summarily suspend a license.
And so how do we compare this then to other cases? History of cases.
Yes, Your Honor.
So Mr. Clear being the most recent notable one where we suspended him based on allegation. It was before he had admitted to anything. The same is true of Mr. Chavez, who actually denied he'd done anything and then admitted that he'd done everything. But it was before all of that happened. And there's history going back in time as well that when you're charged with a very, you know, accused of a very serious offense, this court has routinely suspended lawyers before there's a conviction.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I would say that Clear and Chavez are not very good comparators for what happened here. What the court had in Clear and Chavez was substantial evidence and information of a widespread investigation.
Not at the time that we suspended Mr. Clear. We just knew that there were allegations against Mr. Clear. We didn't know the breadth of it. We didn't know who the paralegal was.
But at the time Mr. Clear was suspended, the court did have you know, the public information that was available, which was released by the Albuquerque Police Department and by the District Attorney's Office about the sheer number of cases that were being dismissed, the reason why they were being dismissed, that the allegation was not a single incident, you know, that Mr. Clear was being alleged to have engaged in this longstanding conspiracy. Now,
how is the public going to differentiate here? Mr. Pori, all over the news, the public sees that there was a criminal defense attorney who allegedly engaged in this conduct. What is the public going to take away from us doing nothing? I don't mean that in a protectionist way for us, but in a protectionist way for the public.
I don't think that the public, Your Honor, should take away that nothing is being done. What is happening here is an isolated incident. The news reports were instantaneous and widespread. Those news reports included a body camera video where Mr. Pori, you know, was denying the allegations against him and included body camera video of what those at the jail said. It is not, there's not a huge amount of ambiguity out there where we should worry that there are going to be assumptions and, you know, decisions being made by the public about what happened here. What we do have, and again, what I think is different than Clear and Chavez too, is an allegation of potentially bribing or gifting things to law enforcement officers to ensure they don't show up in courts if cases get dismissed is also very, very different from the facts here where Mr. Pori unknowingly brought into the facility a glasses case that happened to have...
You're drawing distinctions that aren't particularly helpful. Mr. Clear, at the time of his suspension, said, I didn't do this. Mr. Pori at this time says, I didn't do this. We have to take the I didn't do this at face value. You know, we have to give it this, a similar weight. So I'm not sure you can draw. Yes, in the end, we know all kinds of horrible things that related to Mr. Clear and Mr. Chavez. But at the time we suspended him, it was still a full denial of I didn't do these things. And so we have to give the same weight to those denials by lawyers.
I understand, Your Honor. My argument is not about the denial. My argument is about the alleged conduct. The alleged conduct of Mr. Clear is in no way comparable to the alleged conduct of Mr. Pori in this circumstance.
The suspension rule basically says that in order to suspend, the D board has to show a substantial probability of loss, harm, or damage to the public. So I have a couple of questions. One is, what are your arguments that there is no probability of loss, harm, or damage to the public? Second, is there another action that we could take, another remedy that we could take short of suspension that would ensure no loss, harm, or damage to the public in the interim?
Yes, Your Honor. So to start, as we talk about in our brief, the way that I look at loss of a harm, loss, or damage to the public, there is limited case law or definitions for us to look at. We have a committee commentary note in our rules, and then we can look to the ABA and other states. And what we're looking at are actions that attorneys take that not only directly affect the relationship, but have the ability to affect something in the future. The relationship with their other clients or the court's relationship with the public in the future. And we don't have any allegations here from the disciplinary board or anyone else of any type of continuing conduct, of any allegation of other than a single incident, a single mistake that Mr. Pori made. So when we're talking about harm, loss, or damage to the public, this is not the typical case. The typical case of harm, loss, or damage to the public are, you know, where this court is presented with evidence that attorneys clearly are unable to properly manage their trust accounts, where they are no longer competent to serve as an attorney. It is a forward-looking standard. What the disciplinary board is asking the court to do here today is to look backward at a single incident in a more than 30-year career and summarily suspend a license without any investigation or any process. So that gets to your second question, Chief Justice Vargas, which is what can happen? And that is happening. He self-reported to the bar that this happened when he was released from custody and when he was able to return home and get a phone. And the process going forward is that an investigation happens, that everybody is able to ascertain what the facts actually are. There's a discovery process involved in that. And that we are not here in a courtroom guessing or assuming based on a criminal complaint, which frankly, there are a lot of problems with that criminal complaint. Doesn't include all of the elements. It cites to an offense that is not applicable to the conduct that's here. It cites to the different statutory section, and which only needs to be supported by probable cause.
So are you saying this is an all or nothing? Either we grant the motion to summarily suspend, or we do nothing?
I don't think that denying the motion to summarily suspend, Your Honor, is doing nothing. It's allowing the process to work.
Going to the Chief's question and Justice Zamora's question, I think I'll be a little more overt about this. Our job, yes, is due process, but yes, it's protecting the public. So why not take a middle ground and say, well, we're not going to suspend Mr. Pori, but he's going to be subject to supervision until such time as the charges are resolved, for example, because of our need to protect the public.
Yeah.
That's what the justices are asking you about.
Thank you. Understood, Your Honor. As you all know from the many times I'm here, I don't always get a hint.
I know what they're going for.
Okay. So what I would say is Mr. Pori has been cooperative with everybody who has looked into this, whether it's been the U.S. Marshals, the FBI, the District Attorney's Office, the Disciplinary Board. He is ready, willing, and able. I have not talked to Mr. Pori about whether he would agree to something like that, but from talking to him extensively about this and preparing for today, I'm certain that Mr. Pori is also willing to work with the court and the disciplinary board to ensure that everybody is comfortable with his continued practice. I think what is why I did not suggest that, it is not clear to me, absent agreement from everybody, that the court could unilaterally impose that under the summary suspension procedures. So it's similar to what we just, you know, sat through, where maybe everybody has to agree to something to satisfy the court and satisfy the disciplinary board. But I'm not sure that could be unilaterally imposed. Not that he would oppose it, I just don't know about the power to do so in this circumstance. So,
let me help you really. Sorry, Senior Justice.
Okay.
Under 17207B4, Supreme Court action, we can suspend, we can deny, or issue any other appropriate order. So I think we have more latitude under the this kind of suspension than we did under the prior case.
Glad
I brought the book.
You know, when it comes to summary suspension, we're a rather new state. We have a lack of case law, you know, about what exactly happens in these scenarios. I'm sorry, Justice.
I'm the one that should apologize. This petition is filed on the basis that a criminal complaint information or indictment has been filed, which is under E17A1E Roman numeral 3, but that is no longer the case. So as I understand Ms. Taylor earlier, she's saying because he self-reported, now we're investigating, which falls under small letter I, that he's under investigation. So I would assume you're amending your petition orally here today. But my question is this, is that when there is a pending criminal complaint information or indictment, isn't that greater prima facie evidence of substantial probability of harm of itself versus, well, I'm investigating a self-reported situation? Is there a difference?
I think that there is a difference in the quality of evidence in the cases that have been brought up by the court from the past and what is present here. Where we were at in the process, right, is a law enforcement officer filed a criminal complaint and effectuated an arrest. There was no preliminary hearing to determine probable cause. There was no hearing to determine the facial sufficiency of the criminal complaint. That criminal complaint was filed, and almost immediately, because of the press reports, the disciplinary board put it before it. So the only thing that the disciplinary board is relying upon in asking for the summary suspension is a police report that has a single sentence in it and a criminal complaint that does not discuss every element, especially what I think is the most critical element for the court to consider in the summary suspension, which is, did he know? Did he knowingly take an action that calls into question his compliance with the rules of professional responsibility? Now, as what part of what you asked before, Justice Vigil, is when does this end, right? And the problem is, in criminal investigations, you rarely walk out of an office with a letter saying something is done. You just never hear back. You're just never told. And
but there's different types of dismissals. There's dismissals for lack of evidence. There's dismissals for lack of witness. That wasn't the case here. This was a dismissal by the state so that the feds could take over the investigation.
And like I said in my declaration, Your Honor, you know, the best that I could do in the circumstances, I talked to the lead FBI agent who's investigating the case. I talked to the assistant United States attorney who is overseeing that investigation and the taint team that is going through Mr. Poirier's devices to see if there's any evidence of this. And at this time, no one, you know, has stated that there's any intention to bring charges. Now, of course, you know, you're necessarily in summary, you know, suspensions dealing with uncertainty. That's part of the process. But I do think that there has to be a balancing of the quality of what is actually before the court, the quality of the evidence that is there.
That goes to substantial probability.
I think that it does. And like I said, it's not clear to me what the actual evidentiary burden is, but I think it's certainly higher than probable cause, a substantial probability, which is the only thing that has needed to be met so far, and we didn't even get that determination. And frankly, I think it's probably higher than a preponderance of the evidence when we are looking at the other subsections of 207, which are including admissions or findings that acknowledge that there's evidence beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's not the standard for disciplinary action, though. You continue to impute your criminal... I'm trying to use a word senior justice doesn't like to use. you're converging the criminal case with the disciplinary. If this indictment went away entirely, they could still bring a disciplinary action, right? Let's say the U.S. attorney said we're not doing it.
They absolutely can, Justice Thompson. And what I think what my point is that they don't get to just say, they can't meet their burden just by saying, here's a criminal complaint that alleged probable cause, so we get to discipline him. You know, there is a evidentiary standard that the disciplinary board would still have to meet.
Okay. This is a summary action. So let me ask you this. I do have concerns, and we've faced this before. We take summary suspension, but we do have this in limbo. So the hard thing for me, speaking individually, is how long does this go on under this shortened process, this summary process? Do you have any guidance for us as to when summary is no longer summary? Meaning, any cases from any other jurisdictions in which it starts to impede into your client's due process rights on the merits? Because I do see this, quite frankly, as one of those cases where we're just going to be in limbo. The U.S. attorney's not going to share anything with you. Your client may or may not take the fifth. That's where we're going to be for a while.
Absolutely, Your Honor. So I think, first of all, that due process is implicated today if there is a summary suspension, because there must be some type of finding of future harm or some needing to take an immediate action that necessitates setting aside the typical process to suspend a license. And we don't have any such evidence here. We don't have any evidence of continuing wrongdoing or a risk of continuing wrongdoing. Mr. Poirier no longer represents that defendant. He withdrew as that he was supposed to. The federal courts have taken the appropriate actions that they're supposed to, which is that his two remaining clients have been appointed conflict counsel so that they could be consulted with about Mr. Poirier continuing to represent them and whether they would like for him to do that. And there will be a hearing at the end of May in those cases. And Mr. Poirier, who is, as stated, you know, he is winding down his practice because he is planning to retire here, is also not taking on new cases at the moment. And so my time is up.
Does the federal court, and I don't know the answer to this, under the Criminal Justice Act, is there a list? Have they removed him or barred him? Assuming he didn't withdraw, have they taken any action with regard to his ability from their end to appoint to represent indigent defendants?
They have not, Your Honor. There is a list. There is a panel of the judges of the court created through an administrative order. They are following the process that is in the CJA plan, which is that Mr. Pori did immediately notify Resource Counsel, who's in charge of those appointments. The two remaining clients have conflict counsel so that they could determine whether they wish to be continue the representation with him.
But are they appointing in future cases?
He is not taking future appointments.
Oh, he is not now.
He is not currently taking future appointments. So I am not aware of them having reached out and asking him. The process has changed quite a bit over the years. It's no longer a random wheel. You actually get a phone call from Resource Counsel and are asked whether or not you could take the case. So, Mr. Pori, because of this and because of winding down his practice, is not taking new cases.
Are there any other questions from the bench? Thank you, Mr. Hart.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Court's indulgence for 6 seconds. So I just talked to Mr. Pori while the court was discussing this.
Go ahead, Mr. Lowry. We'll give Ms. Taylor equal time if she's interested.
I just want, while the conversation is taking place, I was conferring with Mr. Pori. He's certainly willing to submit to the court's supervision, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Your Justices.
Thank you.
I just want to address the harm of an active law license, because I think that's where I see the harm in this case, is that we have someone with an active law license. You'll forgive me if I have heard the winding down of the practice only to discover that, in fact, there's not that wind down that we thought. In fact, there's 5 clients or there's 10 clients or whatever. And so it is the active law license. When somebody's suspended, they can't take any more clients by definition. They always can with the active law license. So that's where I see the harm. In this specific instance, again, it's a criminal defense attorney engaging in alleged criminal conduct while representing a defendant. And withdrawing from that case does not mean that it could never happen again. We do have a single allegation, but it's a serious allegation. It's taking a controlled substance into the facility. That's where the harm comes in. As far as alternative remedies, I've never seen it done in summary suspension. I do want to reiterate that I recognize, I think to your point, that I don't know, they're not always very communicative with our office, the feds, about what they're doing or going to do or not going to do and who they're going to refer to us or not. We don't control that timeline. The timeline I can control, though, is whether an attorney has engaged in criminal conduct under 16804, Rule of Professional Responsibility, and whether I have the evidence to go forward with that, independent of charges, independent of a conviction. Because like I said, I know from In re Trinan that this court has said we don't need that to support criminal conduct charges. So we do have a timeline in that sense. And so that takes us out of this big unknown. I would also submit that even if we did not have the timeline that we have, certainly I don't view anything in the rules of summary suspension that you can't petition to have it removed as well. And so I think there is the court could impose whatever timeline they wished to say, if no action has been taken by X date, we can lift the summary suspension. Those are all, although I have not seen it, there's always within this court's purview to do it.
Are there grounds under the rules of discipline that are different from the criminal act, meaning is what you would be basing the disciplinary action on is a violation of law? So carrying Suboxone into a jail as a criminal defense attorney, in your view, in the disciplinary action, you would have to show that was knowing?
Sorry, I have to show what?
You'd have to show the criminal mens rea. It was a knowing act, or I guess my question is, is there act by an attorney that is different from committing a criminal act that would also be a violation of disciplinary?
I think that you can always make things fit into different rules And so we could explore, during the, if we did an investigation, we may be able to find other disciplinary rules that may have been violated within this. I don't know the answer off the top of my head about what sort of, would we have to be able to prove it was knowing to be able to prove a violation of the rule. I would need to do a little more investigation on that.
But you do have an affidavit that says I brought it in, but it was not knowing. Is that sufficient?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think that it would, you know, there's other resources, other witnesses, other mechanisms to determine whether it was knowing.
My question was not clear. Is that sufficient for discipline?
That he brought it in but didn't know.
But didn't know.
It could be, yes.
Well, is it? What rule?
I would say that it falls under a competence rule if you are given an item to take in for a criminal defendant and you didn't do sufficient investigation into that. It could be a competence issue. It could be, you know, that's all I have.
Maybe it wasn't a fair question, but the point I'm making is that you do have facts and you do have them under oath that I brought this in, but it was not, I had no knowledge it was there. It was in the lining of the case and it was in this paper. And I was the most surprised of all that there was something there.
I think that's true, but there are also potential other witnesses that may have differing accounts that may also be credible.
I understand that, but we're talking here with what we have before us in the basis of a petition for summary suspension.
Right, and I want to be clear. Summary, this is, I believe this is the criminal complaint that was dismissed but still stands in terms of investigation is sufficient for summary suspension. Would it be sufficient to go through a whole disciplinary proceeding and impose something other than summary suspension? In other words, would it be sufficient to go to, say, a three-year suspension or a disbarment kind of case? I don't know the answer to that. That would be fleshed out in the disciplinary process. And that's the whole purpose of summary suspension, is to let it get fleshed out in the underlying matter, but at the same time protect the public because the allegations are so serious.
And I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but your petition is filed on the basis that it will result in substantial harm, loss, or damage to the public, and that a criminal complaint, information, or indictment has been filed. But that's no longer the case. That's been dismissed. So as I understand your argument earlier, is that you're saying that there's been you're investigating because of the self-reporting, and that falls under Roman numeral I. But that's not the petition that's before us.
That's correct. I will admit to that, yes.
Okay. Do you agree that there's a difference between the prima facie showing of substantial probability of harm when there is an actual indictment pending versus a self-reporting of something that you're now investigating? Is there a difference?
I believe it depends on the circumstances. I mean, in some instances, I think that if you laid out facts that were, when you talk about your investigation, the investigation, those facts could be laid out that could support that petition as much as any sort of criminal charge or indictment.
Okay, but the only facts you're alleging here are those set forth in the criminal complaint, which has been dismissed.
That's correct.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Taylor. As with the last case, the court will deliberate and attempt to come to a conclusion today. If so, we will come out and let you know. If not, we will let Liz know and she will pass that on to you. The court will be in recess until we decide what to do.
Can I have the court, please? please.
Please be seated. I want to thank counsel for their written materials and for their arguments today. It was very helpful. It is the unanimous decision of this court that the petition from the disciplinary board is denied. Nonetheless, the court has decided that Mr. Pori will only be allowed to continue to practice while the disciplinary proceedings are going on with supervision. Supervision is subject to the approval of the disciplinary board. Supervision, Mr. Pori's supervisor must go with him anytime he goes to visit a client in the jail or in prison, and he's not allowed to deliver anything to any client in the interim. Are there any questions on the court's ruling? Oh, apparently I forgot something. Just a minute. In 1 year, we would like a report back as to whether the proceedings are complete, how close they are to completion, so that we can decide whether to continue the order of the court or alter it in some way.
Or earlier, if they're ended.
If you know earlier, if it's resolved earlier, please let us know that as well, Ms. Taylor. Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you. Mr. Hart?
Yes, Your Honor. On the no deliveries condition, which is understood, does that include mail to sending discovery or letters to Mr. Corey's client? Would that also have to be done by his supervisor or somebody else?
I would say that, and my colleagues can disagree, legal papers are fine. Anything else, no.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Oh, Mr. Hart?
No, thank
okay. you. We are adjourned.
And the court, please.